Deerstalker by Paul Cornell. From the journal of Dr. John H. Watson. I write as best I can in this darkness, illuminated only by a grating to the street. Holmes has disappeared, lost of his own accord. I have done my best to follow his example, if not his person. I could not leave London, but I feel sure that he has. I think I know where he has gone. It is best at this point, if we are not together. I sit alone in a wine cellar, the second level of a coal cellar beneath a building which has been sold, but into which a tenant has not yet moved. It is the kind of abode found by beggars. But it is a situation that I have mentioned nowhere in my writings, and which, therefore, I hope may remain unknown to those that seek me. I hear some of the noises of London life continuing above me and outside. Things are perhaps more quiet than they should be. The inhabitants are wary, hungry for news, aware of the attacks on myself and on my friend, and anticipating another outrage, while understanding the nature of the raids. I am gambling the lives of all those folk that no assault will find me here. None of these buildings could hope to withstand the weapons these bandits have at their command. Holmes will surprise the pirates. They will not find him. He will find them, as he has done so many times before. And this time he will not fall into their trap. I know his methods. I have faith in them and in him. I must embark on my account, fragmentary as it is, for the sake of history. Let others, I pray, let Holmes, if you're reading this, dear friend, make sense of it. I do not know where it began, but I shall begin it with Mrs. Hudson having her fit. I had entered 221B to no greeting from Billy or from Holmes's housekeeper, the door being surprisingly open, and had made my way to the kitchen upon hearing a noise. Holmes had his fingers in Mrs. Hudson's mouth as she thrashed to and fro. His form was pressed up against hers in the corner of the room. She made noises like an animal and was spitting blood, both his and her own. I quickly took her from him and assured him there was no possibility of her swallowing her tongue. I placed her in a more secure posture on the floor in order to check her vital signs. "It is intolerable," Holmes muttered, absently holding his white, bitten hand. "When she entered this state, I had no knowledge of what to do. I could only guess. What good could I have been to her? Tell me, have I even injured her?" I was about to reply in the negative when a thin sound escaped the lips of the pathetic woman. "They are through," she said. "They are here." I paid her no heed, taking her words to be the meaningless spasms of the organ of thought in crisis. "I shall send a message to St. Luke's, and I will make sure there is a bed for her at once." "They are here. What can she mean?" asked Holmes, rhetorically, his face still a portrait of compassion. "Nothing for us, but perhaps everything for her." That, I am sure, was the point where Holmes and the world started to be wrong. The next few days were busy for me, both looking after my own practice, but going home to my, to one of the poor women that I have, in the course of these narratives, referred to as my wife, but who the world would doubtless refer to as, I shall use the word and rely on your tact, old friend, as I slowly realized during our acquaintance I must always have relied on it in this matter, a dolly mop. Yes, there it is out. I shall not drag her name into print. I do not wish to make a character out of her. Let them make of that not what they will, but what I make of it, which is that I loved her. But I must not divert myself. I also spent time seeing that Mrs. Hudson got the best treatment available to her. Holmes I saw little of. I assumed by the cries of the newspaper sellers that his thoughts would be taken with the latest outrage they described, a new series of murders committed in a style quite similar to those that had baffled the police in the latter months of 1888.